What happened to
At
Dreamwave?
least
Con What happened to Dreamwave continuity again? Was that the one where RC became a tranny?
that's
Oh, I don't
IDW.
have that one. Okay. Yeah.
That's IDW, Ben.
Okay.
Breathe deep, Red. Relax. We're
Okay,
not doing
was
IDW.
Dreamwave the one where they revealed that the Ultra Magnus had an inner Autobot that looked like a white Optimus Prime?
Yeah, that's the one where.
That was probably one of the Pat Lee
No,
ones.
that is Dreamweave. That's all Pat Lee. That's where they had
Yeah.
him, like the second miniseries where they go back to Cybertron and, a bunch of Autobots are working with Shockwave, who's taken over the planet. They've basically ignored Prime and Megatron and their shit on Earth. And at one point, Magnus gets jacked up so much that his armor breaks apart and he comes out and he's. It's a nod to the toy from the 80s.
But isn't it Optimus that has the little white guy inside of him?
No, it's Ultra Magnus. The Ultra Magnus toy was literally, we should save this for the show, but it was literally the Optimus Prime toy with a different color. You know how like some of the other G1 toys, like Prowl and what was the other one? Blue Streak, they were the same mold. There's a lot of those. Well, Optimus Prime's alternate mold was Ultra Magnus.
I had Ultra Magnus when I was a kid. It wasn't
Yeah.
the same as Optimus.
It absolutely was
You
crazy.
take the G1 Optimus, like the red cab and the gray trailer. You just take the cab and you transform. Just imagine that toy, but paint it all white with some silver and blue highlights. That was the toy.
And then the back end of it was a car carrier, and the car carrier turned into the larger robot, and then you just clip the Optimus Prime portion onto the
And you
back.
put the Ultra Magnus mask on top and.
Okay,
That was another one that was really
I
lame.
remember
It was
that.
like that was, oh God, I hated that
All
toy.
right, so this is like the Pat Lee era then, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we ready?
I'm ready.
Ready, steady.
Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be doing part two of our three-part Transformers series. This is Transformers the Dreamwave years. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh, this is gonna hurt.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Kill me. Kill me now.
And also here is our brother from another podcast, TV's Mr. Neil.
I still function.
So we're
Yeah.
talking about the Dreamwave years, and this is where Pat Lee becomes infamous with Transformers comics, isn't it?
In like a 4 year, 3 or 4 year period, Pat Lee went from one of my favorite artists because I was really digging on his style to being, man, Todd McFarlane conducts business better than you do, you asshole.
Oh my God, that guy's art, Pat Lee. I can see what he's going for. He's kind of like a G1 fanboy. He draws the characters sort of like the cartoons were, but the faces are horrible. The bodies are terrible. Like the what am I trying to say here?
The bodies were puffy.
He was doing like the puffy Optimus Prime, which did show up in G1, but very
Yeah.
rarely. It was an animation mistake.
Well, I mean the whole Dreamwave thing, it was a company that Pat Lee and his brother Roger had started. They were actually in what do you call it, like an imprint or a studio under Image Comics, and then they started doing comics like what got me hooked on Pat Lee was Dark Minds, which is this whole kind of cyberpunk sort of, Law and Order by way of Blade Runner sort of comic, and Warlands, which was, it's like their take on kind of a D&D setting, kind of got me hooked into that, genre again. And then Devil's Due and G.I. Joe hit in 2002, and it kicked off this whole big, that's when the nostalgia boom in comics came back with a vengeance, because all of a sudden we got new take on G.I. Joe, and Wildstorm had been absorbed in DC Comics at this point. They put out like a pretty good Thundercats comic for a while. I think Image had the license for, He-Man. A lot of these, like the big names, were coming back, and Pat Lee and Roger got the idea for Transformers. And
basically, I think it was from like 01 to about 05. So those 4 years, they ran with it. And then it's like kind of similar to what happened at the end of CrossGen's run, where people weren't getting paid and Pat wasn't returning calls and he was being really shady. And then the company basically imploded and collapsed. And to this day, no one has ever gotten paid for a large part of their work there. Like, I read an article, it's like, it was like in 2015, and it's an older interview in preparing for this. I read an interview with Pat Lee from like 2015, and he was trying to get this thing. It's try to create his own version, kind of the comic book legal defense fund. Like, he was trying to get some sort of foundation going to, you know, get the money and like pay these guys back. And like, he's continued to work. No one quit the industry because of this, but no one would touch Pat Lee with a 10-foot cattle prod for almost 10 years after. And even then, it's, he's done a lot of work for other concerns outside of North America. He's done very little comic work here. But that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the comics.
Well, the biggest thing is there's a couple of noted series during the Dreamwave ownership of the
Breathe, Ben. Breathe.
Sneeze is coming up. Okay, so the Dreamwave license. There was the Dreamwave G1, the Unicron trilogy, which was basically based off of three series of Japanese Transformers cartoons that had nothing to do with each other, but were dubbed and translated and localized as if they were parts of a trilogy. And the proper Transformers G.I. Joe crossover series. And other than that, just a whole bunch of like individual one-off stories here and there. So, you know, let's talk about one of the big events that happened in my mind with the Dreamwave Transformers, which is the issue where Walter Magnus reveals his inner Autobot.
Well, I don't. The thing about that is that I don't know how that factors into the story or at all. It might be okay, but the thing about Ultra Magnus is that, well, in general with Transformers, is that toy accuracy should be forbidden. And the nice thing about G1 is that Sunbow and Marvel just ignored that. They ignored the alternate mode, robot mode that Ultra Magnus had in the toy and just said, no, he's always going to be the large red robot that you see, not
because the cab
white Optimus
when he transforms the cartoon, you can see the cab kind of absorbed back into like the car carrier body as everything shifts around, becomes Ultra Magnus. But yeah,
they had to be really creative about how they showed Ultra Magnus transforming because it doesn't quite work.
Not well, always, but
I mean, it's there's a phrase Neil has used in the past called mushformers.
Yeah, that's basically later in the cartoon series when either they didn't have finalized toy designs at their disposal, or you know they were just working with ACOM and ACOM didn't know how to do shit. The Transformers would just kind of melt into their robot modes or into their car modes. Like ones in particular, like who's the one? It's the lead guy from the Stunticons, Motormaster.
Yes.
He was because he was like Ultra Magnus, he was also the cab and the trailer. So they had to do some creative things about transforming him and you know, dealing with the scale that doesn't quite work.
Yeah. I remember all Optimus Dean was a paint job and he too could transform like
Well yeah.
That was a neat idea for an episode, but it was executed very strangely.
Yeah. I like the idea that they were able to replicate what's it called, Menasor?
Yeah, and they had to do the very quick explanation that one of them was using like their magnetic powers.
But it was the one who had magnetic powers that was part of them though.
Yeah,
but the problem what really screwed up was it was Mirage that was. He said he was using a hologram for the head, but it wasn't Mirage who had the power of holograms. It was,
I believe it was
Windcharger. That's right. It was Windcharger. So they sort of flubbed that a little bit, but they actually made an attempt in the cartoon to explain that.
Yeah,
that sort of fit. But
See, I just thought it was enough that the Stunticons were basically evil versions of the Autobots. We didn't need to be that on the nose with it. We get that Motormaster is Optimus Prime. He's the evil Prime. And basically the forerunner of what would eventually become, Nemesis Prime?
Well, later renamed Scourge.
Yeah. Which I don't like when they reuse G1 names like that. If you're going to reuse a G1 name, you should stick with like what the character was before.
Well, it's better than like that Robot in Disguise cartoon where the Combaticons didn't turn into, was it Bruticus? They turned into Ruination.
Bruticus?
Yeah, that's an awesome name, but not for Bruticus. You're referencing episodes.
I know, but it's my favorite Chris Lauder pronunciation.
And then Megatron comes back and says, "No, Starscream, not Bruce."
Yes, I love that.
You almost imagine him patting him just on gently on the head. It's like, "Oh, you dumb bastard." So, yeah, no, they had the first miniseries, 6 issues. It was called Prime Directive in its collected form, where the Transformers have, you know, all been believed to have been destroyed in the destruction of the Arc 2 ship, which blew up Challenger style. You know, after leaving Earth, and then they are turned into weapons by this guy named Lazarus, who finds a bunch of the Decepticons, and I can make these things work for me. And eventually he's killed, and the war has started again. That goes into War and Peace, which is the second miniseries, which is what Neil was talking about, wherein towards the end of the series, like, Shockwave's taken over Cybertron, and a bunch of Transformers are working for him. Ultra Magnus gets fucked up and his armor falls off and he turns into this, you know, white clone of Optimus. In these series, there is the, just looking at what does the line, there is the War Within trio of miniseries that came out, and these are all like on the dawn of the Great War, and this is where they were first referring to the Dinobots as the Lightning Strike Coalition.
The Rainbow Coalition.
Just like it's not called the Batman, Ben?
I just think the Lightning Strike Coalition is a try-hard name.
It's, well, point is, and this is the thing, some of the Transformers comics here, like they had a lot of artists who would go on to join Udon Studios, which are primarily known for the Street Fighter comics of the last, you know, decade or so.
Fantastic Street Fighter comics, by the way.
Sorry?
Fantastic Street Fighter comics, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got every series. Still trying to collect Street Fighter versus Darkstalkers, but that's another podcast. But in War Within, this is where I discovered some of my favorite artists. Guys like Alvin Lee, who just have this really crisp style, you know, kind of like what Jim Lee, Mark Bagley, that sort of art. And, yeah, it went for 2 miniseries. They had an ongoing, which ran about 10 issues. And this was getting into the 20th anniversary of the franchise. They were building up to Unicron coming back. Megatron had been ousted from the Decepticons, and he landed on Junkion and basically made Wreck-Gar his bitch. And they go to this jungle planet and find like these ancient troop of Decepticon warriors, the Predacons, and he, you know, works on them, and he creates Predaking, and it was building to this big storyline where that's like Megatron's coming back for another big push, and then they're going to have to team up to defeat Unicron, because I remember reading this in Wizard magazine. You remember Wizard, guys?
Vegas. Yeah.
And then the house fell apart. But like Ben was saying, at this time, they also had influenced by the Cybertron trilogy series. Did you ever see any of these shows, Ben?
The Unicron trilogy. Yes, I have watched a couple of these cartoons, and I'm just gonna say they range from barely watchable to if I really don't have anything else to do, I won't have the energy to turn it off, but I'm not really watching it.
Have you ever seen the Unicron trilogy, Red?
No, but from the sounds of it, it would be miserable.
Okay, so Transformers Armada, which is basically it morphed into Transformers Energon because they have three series involved. There's Transformers Armada or Transformers with Pokemon, where they introduce
gotta catch them all, Minicons.
Where they, basically Minicons are these little human-sized Transformers that when they get jacked onto an Autobot or Decepticon increases their power immeasurably.
And
basically, it's like a combination of MicroMasters and Power Masters.
Yeah, exactly. They're no bigger than the MicroMaster toys, and when they transform, they're about human size. Then they had Transformers Energon, which introduced the whole shirts and pants combining aspect for the Autobots and hyper modes for Decepticons, which is essentially flip a switch and these weird like gun barrels will pop out of somewhere in a vehicle form. One of the Decepticon characters, I haven't seen the series for a while, but I remember one, I think it's Cyclonus in Armada, who is a helicopter, gets turned into Snowcat in Energon, and he literally transforms into the Snowcat from G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And then Autobots get the Spark of Combination, and you get like this new Autobot called Ironhide, which is nothing like the better and best version from
G1. Ironhide!
I hated that character.
Oh, yeah. And then you get Hotshot, which is supposed to be like the Bumblebee Hot Rod character of these series. Hotshot would transform in such a way that his legs would become his arms, and then Ironhide would transform so that his body basically turns into pants, and you clip them together, and they're supposed to be more powerful. And then you had Transformers Cybertron, where you kind of get back to the whole Pokemon aspect where you have to go to all these planets and get these cyber keys to prevent Unicron from coming back and wreaking havoc on the universe.
It is very video gamey. I can't quite... Yeah, it's like kind of like the Pokebad.
Yeah.
You forgot to mention through the Unicron trilogy, you forgot to mention Starscream's blanket.
Yes, Starscream had a binky.
You know, Transformers Armada is like the most watchable of the three. Transformers Energon, I can't believe that show came on like a decade after Beast Wars and it looks worse.
I know.
You know, like,
what the fuck happened?
I like Cybertron the best. I found that one the most tolerable.
Armada is the one that was traditionally animated, right? Where
yeah.
Fire Truck and he combines with Ultra Magnus.
He combined with Jetfire and then he could combine with this other one called Overload, which was this giant weapons platform hauled by a Minicon. Now, have we melted your brain yet, Red?
From what you're telling me, Optimus Prime is a huge slut.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, he goes from he has Optimus Prime Super Mode in Armada, then they get the whole shirts and pants thing going with the Jetfire, and then Overload just becomes like this giant weapons backpack. In Energon, he becomes Fatimus Prime, as some people call him, because in his redesign, he's got these skinny legs, and he has this giant Fat Albert-like, torso, and his trailer hauls around these four drones that become like his arms and his legs, and that's his super mode.
Yeah, he's like a combiner team with himself.
Yeah,
Roller!
Then he could combine with the Omega Supreme of Energon, which the toy actually looks kind of really cool. I would like to have it in my collection.
Overall, the Transformers Energon toys are some of the worst Transformers I've ever seen.
Yeah. But, like, the Armada and Energon comic, like, that was the plan. They're going to morph one into the other because all the series were, finger quotes, connected. So, Armada went from issue 1 through issue 18. Energon was supposed to go to issue 36. They're going for 18-issue runs between the animated series, but unfortunately, there is a preview art for issue 31, but that's when the house fell apart on them. The cool thing, and this is just me, have you guys ever read Who's Who of the DC Universe or the official Marvel handbook?
Yes, I have read both.
You ever see those, Red?
Yes.
Okay. You haven't seen those, Neil?
No.
Okay. They did that. Dreamwave did that for Transformers. There was two separate series. The first one to come out was just Transformers More Than Meets the Eye. It ran 8 issues. It was essentially is bookended by this unknown Transformer breaking into the Hall of Records and getting this database on every Transformer, and it goes with every toy that ever came, all the Micromasters, Pretenders, Headmasters, Special Teams, yada, yada, yada. And it basically ends with the Transformer being revealed as being Beast Wars Megatron, and this is just prior to the Beast Wars cartoon where he got the golden disc, which I thought that was a really cool hook.
Wait, that's not supposed to happen. Because the Beast Wars Megatron is a descendant of Megatron.
Yeah.
He's not actually Megatron.
Well, no, he hadn't taken the name Megatron yet, but it's, you know, that it's Beast Wars Megatron, you know, Barneytron, as I like to call him, because he turns into a purple dinosaur. What else was I going to say?
Yeah. But
he's Megatron's little nephew, Megaron.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's like these eight issues are bookended by him breaking into the Hall of Records and downloading whatever data was all on the golden discs that we see in the cartoon of Beast Wars. And then they also did a three-issue miniseries for Armada, which you have, like, the main Transformer, like the Autobots, Decepticons, but that would be maybe half of one of these issues, and the rest of it is just all bios on every mini-con. And I've got it because I collected all this stuff. I like, occasionally I'll break out the More Than Meets the Eye series, like the proper one, and reread it, because for me that's a lot more entertaining. Actually, the last issue of it basically dealt with a lot of, like, minutia. Like, it talked about, you know, cloning technology, combiners, Cybertron, Cybertronian martial arts, you know, Guardian robots, Headmasters, all like the kind of little concepts of Transformers lore, but they got a little more into it than they did in the first few issues. And for a fan, if you want to know stuff like that, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of reading, but it's a lot of fun. So study if you want to. And that's basically where Dreamwave ends. I mean, for what happened in real life with the company and Pat Lee's chicanery, well, he's a scumbag, and he'll probably always continue to be a scumbag. I liked what they put out. The War Within, like the pre-Earth stuff, was cool. I liked what they did with the Earth stories, you know, Puffy Prime aside. I liked how they did it. Like, you see in the ongoing, they were starting to build. They were building towards the future of 2005, and they're building Autobot City. Like, you see the foundation being laid and all that, and it gets a lot. It's a lot of fun. Don Figueroa, who's another great Transformers artist, got his. I think this is one of the first Transformer comics he worked on, and he's a mainstay art now with IDW's line. I don't know. How much of this have you guys actually read?
It's been a few years. I've read some of it. And I tried to kind of brush up on it before we did the podcast, but I didn't read as much of it as I wanted to.
Yeah. Now, the final thing I'm going to mention here, they do, of course, go back to the whole Transformers and G.I. Joe thing. They have the Earth Defense Force in the ongoing. You meet Marissa Faraborn, who they don't explicitly say it in the comic, but it's heavily implied that this is Flint and Lady J's daughter.
Yes.
And she becomes a major character in the latter half of those 10 issues. And they also do one full miniseries and one issue of a follow-up. Now, the first Transformers G.I. Joe crossover, it's in its own continuity, involving the Autobots and Decepticons waking up or coming to Earth in late 1930, so just prior to World War II. I believe the artist on those issues was Jai Lee, who does these really... Some of his stuff is really beautiful, and some of it is, I don't even know what you're trying to do here, but it's really dark and almost grotesque, and it's really cool to see, like, a Starscream that transforms into, like, a... I'm not all up on World War II era machines, but, like, seeing Starscream Autobots, the Decepticons transform into, like, you know, technology of that era. And they even have the whole, they bring it forward to the 80s. They only put out one issue of Transformers G.I. Joe Divided Front, which was a continuity follow-up to this 50 years later, set in the 80s. The first issue, you see G.I. Joe has become the cartoon G.I. Joe. I mean, they're fighting Cobra on the docks. There's, you know, bare-chested Gun-Ho and his sleeveless denim shirt and his hat and his chest tattoo and quick kick in face and wearing nothing but his karate pants and the sash with the shuriken. And then the Duke of the World War II storyline brings in Flint and Lady Jane, you know, a couple of others, and gives them a lowdown, like, look, they're coming back, and they're setting up how Cobra is being funded in part in the technology they have adapted from the Decepticons, and where are the Autobots, we have to find them. And I was really on the hook from that, but then again, that's when it all fell apart. Just the one thing, like, I'll always love the Dreamwave comics for a large part, but it's just, it's kind of like watching Firefly, and you get to that last episode, and it's like, what about season two? And fuck you!
Serenity now! Serenity now!
Yeah. Now, I'm going to ask you, Red, since, you know, we've done a lot of talking, we've barely heard from you, what are your thoughts on Dreamwave, the Dreamwave era?
My thoughts are, have you ever seen the movie Scott Pilgrim or read the comic?
I've got the comic and I've seen the movie.
You know the part when the redheaded chick shoots herself and then falls over?
That's you? Thoughts.
Yes.
Okay.
I still wish the director directed the ending he wanted to make.
What was the ending? Because
For Scott Pilgrim, the movie, the director wanted to film and make the ending of the movie basically that there are no video game physics in the world. Scott Pilgrim is obsessed with this girl, and he's killing all her exes in horrific ways, and the video game stuff is a delusion.
So he completely wanted to rewrite the comic?
No, make it better.
That's completely rewriting the comic, Ben.
Making it better.
Rewriting.
Making it better.
Not really. How about you, Neil? What's your opinion of the Dreamwave era?
Well, what I was fumbling to try to say at the beginning of this is I was kind of critiquing Pat Lee's anatomy, because when he draws the robots, I realize that he's trying to kind of emulate G1 to a certain extent, but if you're an artist and you try to trace where the limbs are coming from, in particular when you see something, when you see like a character from a low angle, if you try to figure out where the neck is, you're going to have all sorts of problems because his anatomy is all over.
Makes you go, nah, nothing's right here.
Yeah, I see it in every single comic he does. I'm just, oh God, this is awful. And the way he draws the humans, I was just flipping through some of his art before we did the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, what is wrong with these faces? What's wrong with your face?
I mean, there's a joke that there's a picture of Megatron from the Transformers movie where he's battle damaged. And the caption is, no, Pat Lee didn't draw this. This is battle damage.
Well, I'm just talking about how he draws the human faces. Everyone looks like they're having a stroke.
Yeah, they all
go back and look at it. I'm serious.
You know, I mean, that's something I liked about Lee's art, because it was so different from a lot of the other stuff I had been reading up till then. I mean, not that I thought it was, like, so much better. It's just, okay, this is new. I can dig it.
Yeah, you know, before that point, JT was used to competent art, and then all of a sudden he saw Pat Lee. He's like, what is this? It's different. It's different.
It's little. Yellow.
I don't remember who did War Within, but when I saw that art, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a lot better.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like that when I got into it, it's just why? Like, the fanboy part of me, like I said, is just is still pissed that, you know, it all kind of fell apart like this, because, you know, I wanted to see them bring in like Ultra Magnus and Hot Rod and Cup, like get to that future. You know, I want to see Autobot City. And later on, you know, we do, I mean, when we talk about IDW, you know, there's a lot better stuff, although I can practically hear Red's blood pressure climbing.
Urge to kill rising.
Don't worry, Red, it's not that bad. So, anyone else have anything else to say?
Well, I don't want to totally, again, I don't want to totally shit on this, but, you know, the thing about Autobot City appearing in the movie is that, you know, the timeline had moved, had, like, gone forward like 20 years, and like that was like a surprise when the city showed up. You're like, oh my god, there's a city, and you know, it's like everything's different, and it was just kind of like this neat sort of fast forward into the Transformers continuity. But when you have like the Dreamwave comics, you know, planning to go back in time and, you know, tell the story of how Autobot City gets built, I'm like, oh my god, who cares? Like, that's not the interesting part. It's like the cool part is seeing the city and being like, oh my god, that looks awesome.
No, I get that. It's like I said, I thought it was cool they were bringing it in, but it's not like I need to see, like, you know, the zoning commission meeting is like, okay, we're gonna put McAdams Oil House over here so it doesn't interfere with the traffic from, like, the Cyber Arcade. You know, not that, but I mean the idea that they were bringing that in and they were building towards that future of, you know, the far off year of 2005.
Right.
So, I mean, overall, like I said, I like these comics. There's so much here that I wish would have gone on, even if after another few years, a couple of years, they ended up losing the license and then we got the IDW stuff. So,
yeah. So overall, this is like the middle stepchild of the Transformers trilogy then, isn't it?
Basically.
More or less.
All right. Well, just wait till the next episode where we'll talk about such wonderful things as RC the Tranny and Decepticonism. So let's wrap this up. This is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
All right, Hank.
And TV's Mr. Neil of Decepticon.com.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.
Farewell.
Urge to kill rising.
I remember when I showed Red that scan of the Decepticonism panel.
Red, you made me my heart skip three beats, and I laughed when I heard you blow up. Megatron isn't a fucking Autobot.
Yeah, he puts on Bumblebee's Autobot symbol on his chest and says, "Bumblebee was my friend, and now I wear his symbol."
And, you know, and the sad thing is, there is no logical way for me to explain how that happened that would satisfy you. So I am... Okay,
JT, I'm going to hate you for this. Probably. For the next couple months. But I'm going to read that fucking series just so I can bitch about it in detail.
Oh, you also have to read the RC series where RC's a tranny.
Which series is that?
It's... God, give me a second.
Because RC was an Autobot in the one of the Decepticons performed the Lopped It Off of Me on her.
That's not actually what happened. Ben's just having fun.
Isn't she Megatron's twin brother or some bullshit?
He was Galvatron's twin brother. Or Spark Twin, as they refer to it in the comics.
They were laser cores, damn it.
Give me a second here. It is in one of the digital... There was Monstrosity, Autocracy, and... What was the other one?
And then there was the comics where Megatron, flashback of Megatron forming Decepticonism, where he is a slave in the... where he's a slave in the gladiatorial pits, where he takes off his helmet and his robo hair glistens.
It's Ben is only slightly correct about that, but I'll save it for the episode. But yeah, no.
He means completely.
I know. I mean slightly.
Completely.
Yeah, it was in. There were these three digital first series that they did. There is Primacy, Autocracy, and Monstrosity is in there, where they have RC as basically they draw him to kind of look like the toy Galvatron from the movie, just with like a very blocky kind of body. And then they have the character G-Axis, who's the character they brought back from the G2 comic, experiments on RC and turns he into a she.
Lopophily.
And
a lop it off. Yeah.
And the thing that bothers me about that is they don't mention that snafu later on when they introduce other female Transformers like Windblade and Alita One. And it's always like, oh yeah, we've always had female Transformers. But they make this that big...
They're actually Transformers?
I was waiting for somebody to say that.
Megatran!
We're spoiling jokes that could be...
Okay, we'll just stop talking about it. We're done. I'm just... It's, so right, yeah, well, you want to do...
Watch a little bit of this Your Hunter from the Future in a little bit.
Oh, you're following in Spoonie's footsteps.
No, we are following our own footsteps.
Okay.
We're watching. It's on in Kitty Hawk's chat room.
Okay.